that it's not quite happened yet.
It's okay.
But now it has, so you may proceed.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Dustin Pevick, and other honorable members of this court and counsel for appellee. My name is Vincent Valentino, and I represent Sheriff Michael Unger, the Stanton County Sheriff, who is a realtor in this matter seeking the public record from the Lancaster County District Court to compel the custodian of those records to turn over certain information that was part of a pre-sentence investigation in the criminal matter of State versus Bryant Irish that this court recently decided in December of this past year. It was a criminal matter that involved a case in which Mr. Irish was prosecuted for an offense that is not frankly listed under the statute for what a victim is defined as. But the public records that are being sought are the victim impact statement, and for all practical purposes, I can tell you that there are only two questions in that victim impact statement that contain the information that we are seeking. And the reason we're seeking this is because Mr. Fales is part of this pursuit situation that occurred started in Stanton County and then proceeded into Madison County, is that there is a civil case pending in the District Court of Madison County called Fales versus County of Stanton, which is a innocent third party issue as one of many issues. But for all practical purposes, questions number 6 and 22, and I can tell you what those are. 6 says, please describe what happened. Please include if you had previous interactions with the defendant. And number 22 is, what sort of punishment would you like to see ordered for the defendant? Those responses were at least elicited during the sentencing proceeding in Mr. Irish's case. And that led to the inquiry being made first by the Stanton County attorney, the Honorable Mark Johnson, in writing formally, because there were certain statements made during that pre-sentence or that sentencing proceeding, not only by the attorney for Bryant Irish, but also by the sentencing court in that matter. It was a matter of a public record. Now, I want to talk a little bit just about victims and victims' rights. And the reason I want to do that is because the victims' rights to speak at sentencing proceedings in person or in writing is constitutionally protected. Article 1, Section 28 of the Nebraska Constitution that was adopted in 1996 constitutionalized the right of victims. Like any constitutional right, it can be waived. And the argument that I think is important here is that not only did Mr. O'Brien, who represents Mr. Fales, want this document, because we requested it in discovery. When we were in the middle of all the discovery processes, this sentencing proceeding took place. And so I end up with a phone call from Joe Smith, the county attorney, saying, there's information that was put into this public record that a number of statements were attributed to Mr. Fales by counsel for Bryant Irish, about that he was actually or could have been considered the driver of the vehicle, and that they were interchangeable, and a number of other statements that are quoted in the record that were attached to the petition for the writ, which, by the way, was an alternative writ was issued, so the burden then became upon the holder of the public records, in this case, the judicial department, the probation department, to come forward with some kind of response. They never filed an answer, which was surprising to me. And even though it's not on the record, I questioned whether or not an answer should be filed, and I was simply told, well, we don't need to file one, or we don't file one of these types of cases. What was presented was a brief was tossed on my desk, and I looked at it and tried to breeze through it. But we made the record with all the exhibits of why we thought we were entitled to have that information.
Did the relators put on any evidence?
The realtor, we did.
I mean, the respondents.
No. No, they simply just put their brief in to the record, and then there was some little bit of interchange between the court and counsel trying to frame, you know, some of the information that was contained in those records.
Is your argument that without a waiver, you couldn't get this material?
Well, that's the secondary issue on that is that because there's no answer, I thought the peremptory writ should have been issued in any event. But if Mr. O'Brien, who represents Mr. Fales, is willing to have turned over whatever his client wrote, and if he had kept a copy of it, I don't think there's any question it would have been produced in the discovery process.
Well, are you assuming the holder of a privilege under 29-22-61-6 is the victim?
Yes, because they have the constitutional right to exercise exactly what he did. He completed this document, and he answered 6 and 22 in a fashion that drew the attention of the county attorney during the sentencing, that then related to the county attorney in Stanton County and myself, because there was a pending civil case saying that this individual was an innocent third party. That's one of the issues in that particular case, which, by the way, goes to trial April 11th. So I've got the counsel, we basically agreed we'll keep the record open until this court otherwise rules, because we have a three-day trial scheduled April 11th up in Madison County, actually on the underlying pursuit liability case.
Mr. Valentino, I'd like to focus for a moment on just a couple of things.
You bet.
First of all, what you're seeking, you concede, was contained within a pre-sentence investigation report.
True.
That's what you are seeking to obtain is within that report.
It is.
You concede the existence of the statute that makes that confidential.
I concede that the statute makes it confidential. But
you're not within the identified people that are granted permission by that statute.
Well, that statute also has a reference to any other parties.
Others entitled by law.
Others entitled by law. Well, others entitled by law has been interpreted not to include jurors. It has not been further interpreted to include the victim who wrote the statement yet.
But the victim's,
or the sheriff.
But the victim's not asking for the statement.
He did. He requested it. We have a record that he requested it. It was part of the writ.
But he's not the relator.
No. But his counsel was prepared to produce that statement in discovery. And he had requested the Attorney General's office to provide them a copy.
Now, you also rely upon Section 84-7112, sub 1, which specifies that citizens have the right to examine public records, but begins with the clause, except as otherwise expressly provided by statute. And my question is, why doesn't that first phrase, except as otherwise expressly provided by statute, referring to the statute making pre-sentence investigation reports confidential, simply exclude them as public records, period?
Because the individual who wrote the document and authored the document was not a judicial official, was not a probation officer, it was, quote, a victim. And that victim has a constitutional right to appear, write, and speak in public. What would be the difference if he had shown up at the sentencing hearing and made the same comments that he made in the pre-sentence investigation?
Can't you ask him to produce it?
We did. And he asked the Attorney General's office to give him a copy of what he didn't keep.
One last thing before I want to leave you with some rebuttal time, and that is your alternative or peremptory writ of mandamus would run at least in part from one district court judge to another district court judge. Do you think one district court judge in this state has the power to direct a writ of mandamus to another district court judge?
I think under the Public Records Act, the way it is written, I think they can. Just because it's a judicial branch of government doesn't exclude it from the Public Records Act.
Mandamus run to inferior officers?
That's where you start.
Well, one district court judge is not inferior to another district court judge.
I don't disagree with that proposition, but that doesn't get you around the problem that you have to start out with the probation officers who originally gathered it up. The judge is simply a recipient potential custodian of the record.
You chose to run it to the judge, not just to the probation officer, right?
They were all joined in. Probation office, District 5 or 7, the state probation office. It wasn't just directed to Judge Johnson. Judge Johnson ended up being the recipient of that and made the comments that were in that transcript.
Well, I have to tell you, I have a problem with one district judge attempting to mandamus another district judge. Now, can we sever that out in some fashion?
Well, simply you go ahead and say he's not included in this process, but there's three other defendants sitting there in that mandamus action, and they're all the ones that generated the records, and hold them now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Gregory?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. May it please the Court. Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and Your Honors. And Ms. Valentino. My name is Elizabeth Gregory, and I'm Assistant Attorney General from the Attorney General's Office. I represent the appellees in this case. The appellant is not entitled to this victim impact statement because it is simply not a public record. Public records are documents belonging to the state, except when any other statute expressly provides that particular information or records shall not be made public. Dylan Fail's victim impact statement is part of the pre-sentence investigation report that was prepared for the sentencing hearing for the State versus Bryant Irish criminal case. Pre-sentence investigation reports, by statute, shall be privileged and shall not be disclosed.
Counsel, let's talk about that document as it sort of makes its way to the pre-sentence report. Assume for the moment I throw in with you that in the pre-sentence report, it's not a public record and they can't get it. But the probation office solicited it, presumably, and received it, and they're the ones that at some point included it in the pre-sentence report, but there was a period of time that it wasn't in the pre-sentence report. Why isn't it or shouldn't it be discoverable apropos the time that it before it became a part of the pre-sentence report?
Your Honor, that is a very good point. The issue that the appellees have is with the procedure by which the appellant is trying to obtain this record. It's not a public record, so a writ of mandamus is not proper. However, even though he is not entitled to it as a public record, he can still subpoena the District 7 Probation Office as a non-party to the civil case Fails versus the County of Stanton. From the record that we have in front of us...
How would that be productive? Because they may have another copy?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that the idea, that one copy is in a PSR... and arguably per statute confidential? Is that the starting point? Or sheltered there? Are all copies sheltered there?
No, all copies are, if I understand your question correctly, whether or not there's another copy outside of the pre-sentence report or whether the only copy is inside the pre-sentence investigation report, the subpoena to the probation office would then trigger a motion to quash pursuant to the confidentiality. What that would do is that would put the issue in front of a judge to determine whether the plaintiff's reason for obtaining this document is valid, whether the document's confidential, whether it needs to be redacted.
Wouldn't the state at that time interpose and object on the basis of 29-22-61-6?
Yes, Your Honor. And
so that we're still here, whether it's a public record.
No, Your Honor, because then we wouldn't be here in a mandamus action. We would be in the district county, in the district court, with a discovery action.
So that would make it garden variety discovery?
Correct, Your Honor. That would make it...
If the victim retained a copy, would make it garden variety discovery?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let's get back to the probation office. If they've got it, what happens then if it's garden variety discovery? Can it be discovered?
It would go through the process of the subpoena, the motion to quash, and then the judge determining whether...
Well, what is your position on whether or not it's discoverable?
That would be up to the judge. It's not up to the Attorney General's office to determine if it's...
You're begging the question, what is your position, the state's position, if that scenario develops?
Well, the state's position is that it would be up to that judge to determine.
I sense your argument is... You're arguing the procedure under which the discovery was attempted not the fact that the document could, in fact, be discovered.
That is absolutely correct.
So, and this would relieve Justice Castle's concerns that one district judge wouldn't be mandamusing another. The district judge would be mandamusing somebody in the probation office as they refuse to produce it.
Exactly, because, as Your Honor mentioned, it is inappropriate for
one district judge. Let me ask the question in this way. Would you be defending or acting as the lawyer for the probation office in that situation?
Yes, Your Honor, we would. The attorney
so what would your argument be?
Our argument would be that it is confidential under that statute. However, that statute does give the discretion to the district court to make that determination, whether or not the person requesting that record is someone who is interested and who the court would determine could obtain that record under that statute.
So, can a victim impact statement be made orally at sentencing?
It could be, Your Honor. And
would that be a public record if that was made at sentencing, as opposed to having a written statement that came into the pre-sentence report?
I think the transcript would be a public record, and they could subpoena that statement. In fact, the transcript in this case does contain a partial transcript of the sentencing hearing, or it might be the full transcript.
I don't want you to pursue any further.
Would you address counsel's argument that fails? The victim here waived any privilege. Can he waive it? And who's the privilege? Who holds the privilege?
The victim in this case does not hold the privilege because the document is contained in the pre-sentence investigation report. The holder of the privilege is the court because the court orders the pre-sentence investigation report to help the court determine the defendant's sentence in a criminal case. And if it is the case that Mr. Fales does hold the privilege, then the proper action would be to subpoena the District 7 Probation Office, as I stated before.
Counsel, every pre-sentence report I've ever looked at has the police reports, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone just goes all the time. People go to the police station and get those reports. Why aren't you saying those reports are privileged because they are contained in the PSI?
Because those reports are also contained in a different place. The issue that we have here is that the appellant is trying to get the victim impact statement from the pre-sentence investigation report. We would have no problem if the victim himself kept a copy of it. That would not be an issue. Again, if he subpoenaed the probation office, we would not be here on a writ of mandamus.
You wouldn't be defending the probation officer's refusal to produce the report, right?
We would, but it would not be in a mandamus action. The issue that we have is that this is an action for a writ of mandamus. That defense of the probation office in the discovery action is different. It's a discovery action, and that would be the procedures in a general
discovery of a non-party?
Yes. Yes, discovery of the non-party.
So it'd be a miscellaneous event?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you address the counsel's argument that you didn't file an answer?
Yes, Your Honor.
Therefore you somehow waived it?
Yes, the appellant did not raise this issue at the district court, so it need not be addressed on appeal. Second, the filing of an answer in a mandamus action is not required. Third, the district court prescribed the procedures that the parties were to follow when it entered its order after the appellant filed his petition. The district court ordered a show cause hearing, the parties to file briefs in this matter, and it ordered the appellees to produce Dylan Fales' victim impact statement to the district court for an in-camera review and inspection. This order did not require the filing of an answer, and the record clearly shows that the appellees complied with the district court's order. Additionally, the appellant was not prejudiced by the failure to file an answer. The appellant was present for the hearing that occurred on June 30th of 2015, and the appellant submitted a brief to the court. So the answer was not required in this case.
Would have been a good idea, though, probably.
Yes, Your Honor. The trial court found that Dylan Fayle's statement is not a public record, and this finding was correct. The appellees respectfully request this court affirm the district court's finding. If there are no further questions, I thank Your Honors for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
It is over.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is actually two cases consolidated for argument. That would be the Cattle National Bank and Trust Company versus Watson. And just